We acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. This is Cheryl from Djadjawarong country.
Hello and welcome to episode 130 of the Beyond 90 podcast. This is Eric Sibihano hosting Australia's longest running women's football podcast for you once again. And I've got two highly capable and highly intelligent individuals and highly passionate about women's football as well. These two, they're here with me to help us guide you through the latest week in women's football. So firstly, and just because she's in the middle of my little Zoom screen, good evening to you, Cheryl Downs. How are you?
Oh, I thought it was going to be Madge. I didn't know where I was. Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me back. You haven't gotten rid of me yet. It's great to be back and talk another week in football, and there's some fun stuff to talk about, so I'm excited.
Yes, and joining us once again from the Sunshine State, it's Magella Cards, the legendary Matilda's active support member. So how are things going, Madge?
Yeah, good. Easing into the year. Actually, not. I don't feel like I'm easing into it. I feel like I've been plumped, just, you know, straight into it. No chance to ease in. So, but yeah, big year. So got lots to do.
Excellent. So, well, you all have lots to do because football never, ever, ever, ever seems to stop. But on to our history lesson. So Matilda's cap 130 is Kylie Ledbrook. Debuted for the Tillies in 2004 and played for them up until 2011. So 19 appearances with the single goal for the national team. Ledbrook played in midfield, and despite a relatively small number of appearances compared to others, a lot of major tournament appearances. So she went to the 2004 Olympics and then the 2006 Asian Cup and the 2010 championship winning Asian Cup campaign as well. She's a veteran of the Ansett Summer Series, 5 seasons with the New South Wales Sapphires, and then in the dub, 6 seasons with Sydney and 1 season with Western Sydney Wanderers. But I mean, and this is probably more of a Sydney reference, she's legendary for the work she's done with NPL New South Wales powerhouse Macarthur Rams, 16 seasons with them, and more locally in our state, was the 2018 NPL New South Wales Player of the Year, something she won jointly with Courtney Nevin. So I might just throw the two of you about your Ledbrook memories, but I remember incredible passing range, great set piece ability, and a really fearsome long range shot. So so I think Cheryl, because you have at least some memories of Ledbrook, like going back a bit now, because that her time is a little bit of a while ago. It's pre-COVID, so who knows how long ago that actually was. But yeah, what do you two remember about Kylie?
I feel like we need to get someone like Groobs on the pod who can talk to some of those early 2000 years, because I don't remember those. I wasn't an avid follower of women's football back then, but I certainly remember when Kylie came back to the W League or was in the W League, and I remember her coming back and she just seemed incredibly fit. And I'd have to say the same for Sel as well. When Sel came back to the league, I think what we're seeing is people who have taken that journey from their football and keeping the fitness and activity part as part of their lives. And I think when they come back, they just really offer the team something quite different. So, you know, while their skills, I'm not saying that they're rusty at all. I'm sure that their skills are still on point, but their pace may have slowed down a little bit, but they are smarter than their pace. So instead of chasing around everything, they're like, okay, if I position myself here, then this is going to be the great spot to be. And then the players who do also have more pace can learn from that and see the game in a different way. And I'm sure that she saw the game evolving as well, because back in the day when she would have been on the field and, you know, in her heyday, I think it would have been quite different as well. So, lovely to see these players come back and play the game. And as Purcell, as I said, bringing them back to another audience who may not have seen some of those earlier games. And it just points out that, geez, we wish we had so much more footage of the Matildas from back in that era. And I'd like to think that people are, I mean, there's a Matilda's documentary coming out, I thought. I wonder how much archival footage will be in there as well. And, yeah, they're the things that I can look forward to.
Yeah, I think similarly, remembering Kylie when she came back in that sort of latest stint in the W League, I think just speaking to the points that both of you have made, that yeah, I just remember her, the phrase that comes to mind is like poetry in slow motion. Just felt like she had time on the ball, and that's probably, yeah, what you're saying there, Cheryl, that she knew how to position herself really well, maybe not being the fastest person on the field, but yeah, great positioning, you know, coupled with, yeah, great passing range. I just remember when she came back and hearing a lot of, you know, the commentary talk about her, and then going, oh, okay, yes, I can see why, because she certainly made an impact coming back into the dub that I sort of remember there in those last few seasons that she played.
And confidence as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things when they look like that they've got time on the ball, they might not have any more time than anyone else, but they've just got that confidence in their capability that, you know, I'm not going to be rushed off the ball. And I think that's something that's very difficult to coach, because, you know, the first instinct is I'm under pressure, I need to get rid of the ball, versus I'm under pressure, I've got control of the ball, it's okay. I don't know.
Yeah, and Ledbrook's career is, I think, possibly relates back to a point, what we always say, you need to professionalise A-League women to make it, just to improve the standard, and, you know, we need to work towards getting that done, because that gap in her A-League women history between 2013 and 2017, her career took her in a different direction. I think she was... My understanding was, I don't know if she's still doing this, but she was managing at least one, maybe multiple McDonald's restaurants. That was her job. And she had to make the decision, as a lot of highly talented players have done, where she had to prioritize the income, the day job, because she couldn't sustain herself with football. And who knows, if she'd been able to become a full-time pro when she was younger, probably would have had many more A-League women appearances and many more Matildas caps. But we'll move on. And I think the biggest news is the Cup of Nations details being officially announced. Finally, we don't have to rely on rumors and those wonderful Twitter users that seem to get their news from find news relevant to the Tillies in every corner of the globe. So the Matilda schedule, it's they're playing Czechia, also known as the Czech Republic, in Gosford on Thursday, the 16th of February. Then they have Spain in Western Sydney, Sunday, 19th of February, and then Jamaica in Newcastle, Wednesday, 22nd of February. So I want to hear the non-New South Wales perspective on this. So Cheryl, could you please go first?
Well, I'm not going, but I'd love to. I think that's the perspective that I have in a World Cup year where we've been busy booking our flights and thinking about hotels and different transport options and game tickets and whatnot. It's not the richest year that we're going to have. Mm-hmm. Our money's kind of already spent, but it's also a great opportunity to see even more of the Matildas if it's possible. For me, I'm going to cut my losses and say I'm not going to that one. But yeah, love to be there, love to see those matches. Hope the game coverage is great, but it's just not the same as being at the venue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Madge, of course, with your Matildas active support connections, is it even possible for you to?
Yes, no, I still have to get the time off work, but I will be trying. Hoping to make all three games. I think it's really interesting. I think Tony said that he wants to sort of mimic a World Cup group atmosphere with this tournament, which I think is a good group of teams there as well to sort of mimic that sort of experience that you know, having one really tough team, albeit without likely 15 of their best players, but then they still seem to be trucking along pretty well based on their other friendly results to date, Spain. So, and Jamaica, you know, hopefully Bunny Shaw comes over as well. So should be some great games. On the point of them being in New South Wales, look, we can complain or like, yeah, I do really hope and I do expect that Adelaide and Perth will get some Matildas games in the lead up to the World Cup as well this year, because as I've always said, they are the nation's team, and we want to make sure that as many people around the country get to see our beloved Matildas as much as possible. as a Queenslander, I got a couple of games last year, so I'm not sort of banging down the door to get heaps more. But of course, there is also that added complexity of which governments are going to pony up the attractive packages to Football Australia to attract these big ticket games. So yeah, it's a bit of a hard one, but I would hope at least just in the lead up to the World Cup that Adelaide and Perth, just as you know, testing out their venues and getting things shipping in shape for the World Cup, that we, you know, those fans should be getting some Matildas action, hopefully.
I wonder who wears the heat. So when you look at these decisions are made, and they're great decisions for football because they're bringing in money, but the heat comes down to Football Australia, for example. But all they're doing is trying to look after how short term is it versus a longer term view of contributing to opportunities for the nation to watch around the country to be able to see the games. But if New South Wales or Destination New South Wales has offered twice as much as anyone else, then short term, it's still the best decision. It's just kind of a discussion around maybe Football Australia, should they be more transparent to say, we have engaged with each of the different state and territory governments. This is the best deal. And they probably can't do that. But I think that's what we're missing. And that's why we feel like, oh, well, you never even, if I can swear, you never even bloody spoke to anyone in the Victorian government and what's going on. But yeah, so for me, I think there is a, bias towards the Matildas being in and around the east coast of Australia, certainly, and kind of around New South Wales as well, and kind of around Sydney in particular. But this one shows that, I mean, there's a match in Gosford. That's great. So, yeah, it gets around. I wish it got down south a little bit further. But there is a dub match, a completely different topic. There's a dub match in Hobart this weekend or this round, there isn't is. There?
So yes, you know, Brisbane Roar. I considered it. I was like, oh, there's a Roar game against Western United down in Hobart. I did think about it, but I've spent so much money on flights this year. So I just went, I'm going to have to give that one a pass. But that'll be fun for all the fans in Tasmania and Hobart getting along to watch the dub, and hope they get out and support the Roar.
Yeah. And shout out to Molly, who's just left Tasmania and come to Melbourne. Great timing, Molly.
Oh, well, I mean, she theoretically will have still have more access to the dub in Melbourne now.
True.
Although, interesting, yes, you are right that now she gets its game in a home state, but well, these things can't be helped. Oh, by the way, just because people were talking about their plans, I will be going to New Zealand during this window for the Intercontinental World Cup qualifiers. So it's going to be history made for multiple countries no matter what. I'm really looking forward to it, and really looking forward to 7 nights in Hamilton. I will know every bit of that relatively small place by the time I'm done. But see, as we move on, more Matildas related news, I'll brush over this quickly, but the draw for AFC's 2024 Olympic qualifiers was held.
Don't brush over it quickly.
Oh, no.
It's like we're going from guaranteed a spot at a major tournament to back to terrifying qualification.
Yes. Terrifying qualification. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because thanks, Madge, because I had brushed the 2016 tournament, 16 tournament, out of my head, and now it's back.
That was one of the best feelings ever, the 2016 tournament, but terrifying nonetheless. So two spots, that's it?
I think. I'm just looking up the Wikipedia page now. But
pretty sure it's two spots at the end of the day. So Australia, we go in the second round, so we don't have to play through groups from the very beginning. But then there's the three group format, where it's top teams plus the best of the second places.
You're right. This is going to be terrifying. But first, the terror, as Madge said, Australia get a bye to the second round. So the terror is going to be experienced by other people, including my beloved Philippines first, who are in Group E with Hong Kong, Tajikistan, and Pakistan. But yes, seven groups in the first round. Only the group winners face North Korea, theoretically, North Korea, Japan, Australia, China, and South Korea, who have a bye to the second round. That second round is three groups of four. And
there's going to be a group of death in there.
There's at least a group of death, and
well, at least we won't have Brazil because it's the AFC.
Yes. So instead we have Japan, China, and South Korea, which I'm not sure I feel better about, to be honest.
Yeah,
true. So only way to guarantee, so after the three groups of four, it's knockout semifinals and win that, get to the Olympics. That is the joys of a small, trying to qualify for a smaller tournament than a World Cup. But yeah, the only way to guarantee it is to win your group or finish second and be looking nervously at the results in the other groups. So yes.
And then win a semifinal.
Then, yeah. Oh yeah. And then after all that,
you're still going to win a semifinal.
Is it? Oh, it's two-legged as well. Oh, this is, well, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
And that is
something to look forward to after cruising into a home World Cup.
Yeah. So after all that, I'm looking at the month. So Australia starts, this is October. Wow. That is not long after the World Cup at all. So all three of the second round match days are in October. Good Lord. And then the semifinals are tentatively scheduled for 27th of November. Thanks for the birthday present, I think.
Yeah.
I think. And 6th of December. Good, my goodness. okay. Well, that's a problem for future Eric, future Imagine, future Cheryl to worry about.
Big year. It's big year.
Yeah. Something else for us that is a lot less stressful is Sam Kerr being nominated for the best FIFA Women's Player 2022, her sixth consecutive nomination. Again, link to the full list in the show notes, but yeah, it's just incredible really for her to maintain that consistency, because at the start of this streak she was doing the NWSL A-League Women thing with Perth Glory and Chicago Red Stars, I think. Well, so long ago. And now, despite all the changes in the football landscape and her own career, she's still banging in the goals wherever we go. And yes, we will talk about a particular Sam Kerr goal later on, but yeah, just I don't know, love to know your thoughts about how just you've seen Sam progress over this time.
Yeah, just jump in.
Maybe we just get a bit complacent. I think I might be actually a little bit complacent about just how fantastic she's been, because we've been able to see it in the dub and we've been really lucky. Seeing her play with some great international players as well in the dub in the time that she was here as well. So, just seeing her go from strength to strength, it's been a real privilege and probably something I shouldn't take as much for granted, and I should actually make sure I watch a little bit more of that WSL that I've got access to, but there's so much football to watch. But just being able to come up with those big time goals. I mean, she did it in the 2019 World Cup. She's done it again, which we will talk about. She's big time player, and got to appreciate her while we've got her.
I love Sammy, and I think just she's one of the players who I've been able to see all of her career. I mean, apart from when you're a junior and no one's sitting there watching 9-year-old football or 12-year-old football or whatever it might be. So having the privilege to be able to see that development has been wonderful. And then at times you think, she missed that shot, but young, learning, getting better and better each time. I think if I think about the next step for Sam, part of that is not just Sam, it's the Matildas more generally, because we're seeing some of the best of Sam in club football, and very important club football, because now that she's playing in the FAWSL, much more important than the dub. But if we think about how does Sam really get recognised, you almost think that the Matildas need to support her in that next step, because I don't think that there's quite the... it's not quite as good when she's with the Matildas. The playmaking is a little bit different. Their time together is a little bit different. So in a World Cup year, it might be different, but we're talking about these current awards coming up. I'm not sure. I think that is possibly one area which hasn't been the best for Sam, because the Matildas have not been able to showcase her directly in that way. And I don't mean that as a downer. I'm just saying in terms of the next uplift, I think that's where it can be made, because she's doing awesome.
Yeah, being able to go deep into tournaments to sort of, put her on that stage. I guess to the men's game, you maybe think about, your Modrics and stuff, but, that's with getting to World Cup finals with Croatia and things like that. So, being able to put her up there. And then, you see England have a wonderful Euros, and then Beth Meads shoots up all of these.
Kira Walsh, absolutely.
Although one thing I do just want to say also is I do love that remembering, to your point about seeing her whole career, just remembering when that one of the first backflips that she did in that grand final with the Kerr-Powell.
Making
yeah, keep going, match. It's okay, match. Keep
not
going.
One that you like, but just that making the back page of a major newspaper.
That was her playing with Sydney against Melbourne Victory, I think. Yep, don't want to talk about that. We can move on, Eric, to whatever was next on the list.
Yeah, but just the point, because you mean, because of the growth in the women's football fan base in Australia, I think there are quite a few people who don't remember. Yes, Sam Kerr did once play for Sydney FC, so although of course more for obvious reasons more well known with her hometown team Perth Glory. But as we go from one Aussie forward to another, great news for Remy Simpson, and we finally have the club and confirmation of the rumours. Remy Simpson is going to FAWSL side Leicester City. So I think that's another, we've been speaking about the progression of a career. Well, this is one. She's scored a lot of A-League women goals. She's banged in the goals for her hometown and home NPL team, Manly United. This is the next step. It's great to see. And despite being Leicester City, despite Leicester City being at the bottom of the table for now, I think even in the worst case scenario that she gets relegated, I still think this is a good move for her, even if she ends up in the championship next season. But what do you think?
I think she's a great asset. I think Remy is a player who has had some exceptional periods of time with Sydney. I think there was one year, I can't remember, maybe she scored something like 10 goals, but she wasn't always there. So it was a really good strike rate. And she shows that she's got class and she's got tenacity. And I think she's got incredible desire. And I think that step away from the dub, because in some, it's still kind of that development league. Mm. But I think, yeah, definitely the next step for her is something like that. And she's already said around how she's never seen a club with that much in terms of facilities. So I think it just goes onwards and upwards for Remy. And I think it gives her a really good stab at getting a more mainstay kind of position with the Matildas potentially.
Yeah, I think it's a great club where, I mean, hopefully she'll get a lot of game time given their position on the table, but then also being able to come up against some, you know, fantastic competition week in, week out. So if she can get that balance right, you'd think it's a great move for her.
Yeah. So now on to a more Aussie news. What this is rumors this time in terms of leaving clubs. Lydia Williams, our beloved Lydia Williams, has had a tough time in club land. And rumoured, thanks Cheryl for sharing this in the Beyond 90 Slack, rumoured to be leaving PSG with Brighton, a possible destination. And I think, possibly I speak for lots of people when I say I don't really care about the club too much as long as she actually gets to play, because I'm sick of doing Aussies Abroad roundups and saying that she didn't play again. So, I mean, hopefully the window's open right now for, I think, the whole month of January, is that right? So hopefully she can get something going, because she needs it, and the Matildas are needed as well, and so that we can have a number of goalkeepers getting regular game time. That's a bit depressing, but
just on that as well, I think it was, if we look back at the era of Joe Montemurro at Arsenal, I think he was the instigator for having a couple of the Matildas there, including Steph Gatley and Caitlin Ford. Whether or not, if Joe wasn't there, I don't know if the same thing would have happened. And you see now, I mean, Caitlin Ford has rediscovered her passion, and this is through her own admission, for football, and she's playing great football. Steph Catley is always just perfection because she's from Victoria, so we'll take that as a given. So I think Arsenal, Joe Montemurro, great. Lids had time there, but she's never really had all the time. So maybe Brighton could be a really good choice. And if they're, are they mid-tier at the moment, middle of the table or something like that?
I wish I'd looked that up.
I don't think they're in the top four. Chelsea, Arsenal, Man U, Man City or something. So they're not up there in that.
Got it. Brighton are second last.
Okay. So I'm thinking that she's then going to get a lot of action. If she's in that starting position, I think she'll get a lot of action. And it could also be that, you know, there's an opportunity for her to share a little bit as well. But anyway, I think it's hopefully, if it does come off and we have to see if the stars align for Lids, But I think it's pretty important coming up to the, we are in the World Cup year. I think there's 184 or something or other days to go from now. You know, we need a dedicated second keeper. Is Tegan top? Is Macca injured? Is, you know, is Casey in the mix? I don't know. I'd love to see Liz given the best opportunity to be there because I think she's a phenomenal goalkeeper.
Yep, I do agree. It's been way too long since she's been a regular starter at club level. Now, on to some interesting news that we found and really questions raised about the maternity policies at FAWSL clubs. This was inspired by something I read with Reading defender Emma Mukandi, formerly known as Emma Mitchell, who basically said somewhat worrying things about how she wasn't allowed to take her baby into the Reading training facility, things like that, and how possibly the support isn't what it could have been. As always, I'll link to this should you want to find out more. But it's just something like not being able to get childcare, and if she couldn't swing it with her partner and her family on a game day, then she might not be able to play the game, which is it's annoying that it's worse than annoying that we're still seeing and hearing these kinds of stories. But at least in this article, it's not all bad, because on the flip side of things, Chelsea reportedly very good with Melanie Leupolz, who has also given birth recently. And I mean, it's the easy thing. I'm going to say it anyway. I'm pretty sure this has something to do with the fact that Emma Hayes is also a mother. But I don't know about your thoughts.
I think in a lot of history of women's football, a lot of things come down to the quality of the coach and what the coach demands of clubs. So there's also the money that clubs have available to invest into their teams. But often, and yeah, for good and for bad, because you do need those leaders who push standards forward, and obviously Emma Hayes is one of those, and hopefully we see more clubs follow the lead that she is expecting for her team. But yeah, I think that's that at the moment it does seem to be that it may be more situational for players as to what kind of support they might be able to expect from their clubs, which makes it difficult for people to plan their lives if there isn't actually, you know, really strictly codified standards that clubs are held accountable to.
Yes, and compounding that is the tendency of women's football to be run on one-year contracts, which makes this, and Emma did say this in the podcast that she was on that I got this from, that yeah, that just makes it even more tricky to just to plan. Now,
so I have a not completed thought in my brain, so I'll think about this as I'm talking about it.
Cheryl, go on.
Well, and the way I look at it, and I don't mean, it's not a comparison about, well, if it was the man who had to take the baby or the child or something to their game, would they have sorted this out? Yeah, I don't want to do a comparison like that. But what I do want to compare is, if that was the situation in men's football, there's the difference of money as well. Mm-hmm. Because if there was no support provided by the club, or if there was suboptimal support provided by the club, the player, if it was a male in a similar tier, so if we're talking about WSL or Champions League or something, the guy would quite possibly have been paid significantly more, which would then potentially be able to accommodate their own care. So, and I'm not saying that that absolves the club of doing its due diligence or duty, but yeah, there's differences all over here. So I think it's not quite as simple as saying, well, if it happened to the guys, well, the guys would be like, oh, well, I've got three nannies or whatever it might be. It's not that simple. I'd love it to be put in a position where the players don't have to make that choice, or they don't have to have that stress either, because I don't think they would necessarily be able to play at their best if this is something that they have to try and work out week on, week off. So anyway, that's my thinking as I go.
Yep. And there was another thing, not in the article, but in the podcast I listened to that Emma Mukandi was on, one of the things, and when they work on mothers getting back to playing, is, you know, things like the pelvic floor things that they need to be worked on just so they can actually run. So I think there's something mandated, at least in the top two Volunteers of England about 14 weeks. Oh, my apologies. 14 weeks before you get back in terms of, 14 weeks of paid maternity cover on at least 2/3 of their salary. But ask anyone who's had a kid, 14 weeks ain't nowhere near enough to see someone back to, you know, what you might call normal after giving birth. So clearly a lot of work still to be done.
Now, and I wonder whether or not they're guidelines or rules as well, because I think that part of the decision should be with the mother.
Yep.
You know, if they think that they're ready at 13 weeks or 10 weeks or whatever it might be, I'm sorry, my dog's being a twit. You know, I think that's for them to decide. And that's why I think the principle of a guideline is good, but you also wouldn't want the club to take advantage of that and say, oh, well, it says anything from 10 to 14. So, you know, you're good at 10. I'm going to push you back out there. That's not the intent. The intent should be that the player has some choice in it.
Yes, of course. Very good point, Cheryl. Now, as we shift to the sadly the hot topic of women's football over the last 12 months, ACL injuries. But Cheryl, great find for you in The Athletic. I'll link to this, or I should warn you, it is behind a paywall, but Cheryl and I are both subscribers, so we can summarize this for you. Basically, former Scottish professional footballer, he's now a surgeon, Professor, if I'll get his name right, Professor Gordon Mackay, as possibly groundbreaking new ACL surgery technique. So my layman's terms is they take something from elsewhere, but usually a hamstring, to build to try and construct a new anterior cruciate ligament. But he's Gordon Mackay has instead worked on this internal brace technique. So obviously I'm not smart enough to go through the details, but it is in the article. But basically this internal brace allows the person undergoing the surgery to get back to movement quicker, which reduces muscle atrophy and things like that. And potentially, fingers crossed, it reduces the layoff time and players can get back to full running, full contact, etc. sooner than before, because it seems to be a minimum of 12 months with ACLs. Now, of course, as we covered in previous podcasts, there's a bunch of factors with regards to ACLs in women's football that we need to talk about. But the article does cover that as well. But yes, of course, surgery is part of it. So if, as with Cheryl, any chance to improve the actual surgery procedure, that's obviously more than welcome.
Yeah, so there's a bit being done at the moment, of course, around the guidelines of, I can't remember the numbers, can they reduce the incidence by up to 1/3 by sort of the, not prehab, but conditioning it, particularly women athletes or women footballers, you know, so reducing is better than fixing, and fixing, if that can be done in a shorter time frame, then that's a next goal. It's interesting, in my professional job, I work in IT, and there's a guy that I've been working with there, and he's done some, I don't know if it's research, but some investigation into the football grounds as well, the pitches, and underlying it's not just grass. Underneath the, or embedded within some of the grass, is something like the, when you buy a bag of oranges and you've got all that kind of netting around the bag of oranges, some of that is built into some of the turfs. Now, whether or not that's just in cricket or in football or those kind of things, and how much extra drag or resistance is that creating, and have the models all been based on male athletes? I'm not sure. So, look, I think surgery is just one part of the equation, but in the article it does talk about some different codes. It does definitely start to look into football as well, but I think what they've been talking about, they've looked at thumb surgery and, I don't know, arm surgery or different bits and pieces, and with the ligaments in there, and they've said that for knee surgery, I think they had a couple of people who, there was one example, an NFL quarterback who had something like 17 surgeries on his knees. And you think about the muscle atrophy and the time lost through all of those kind of things, that's significant. But instead of a player now maybe taking out 12 months from their career, it could be that it's 4 months, you know. And this is maybe I don't want to get too excited about it too early, but if it's some kind of breakthrough, and if there's more opportunities to trial that, and I think Beth Mead has been quite vocal in the need to have further investigation, we're looking at the top players in the world, the top women players in the world. it needs to get more recognition and notice than what it is. And I think it is now, but we probably won't see the benefits of it for just a little while longer yet. So everyone, look after your knees. Don't go anywhere near an ACL for a little while. And we do hope that at some point it'll get better. And we just had a off air, we had a quick chat about a couple of the high level Australian players who have either done their ACL rehab and they're already back. So Chloe Legazzo for one, Holly McNamara, I hope is coming back soon. I'm not sure when. Ellie Brush has already been there, done that, come back. Great to see her back. Ellie Carpenter, looking good, still got a bit in front of her. Kaya Simon is another one. And I'm sure the list goes on with Riley Basden and a couple of players more recently. But, you know, it's a long time to wait. And you look at even Elise Kellen-Knight, the journey is not always a straight zero through 365 days and then you're back. It can be very bumpy.
Yeah, it's such a, and I think we've said this before on the podcast, that these sorts of injuries that we're starting to see, it's almost that death by a thousand cuts. It's like all of these different factors leading into it. And I almost wonder, and I have no stats to back this up, either than just seeing high level player after high level player go down with ACLs. I mean, is that also paralleling just with the exponential increase in professionalism of the game that we've seen? But this is a generation of players that may not have had the same pathways and level of professionalism when they were younger as well. So from right back from junior development, but as we go forward, as the professional, as the game keeps getting more professional and the pathways all the way down to junior sport get better and the access of young girls to sport and how they progress through sport in their early years is that part of the, you know, conditioning and the predisposition to injury that's just one, you know, one slice of the story that you know leads to just so many injuries that we're seeing at the moment.
And the boots as well were mentioned. Boots, and I know that this has been talked about before, because it's interesting when we think about being predisposed to ACLs for women, it's up to six times more. But then if you look at the whole system, you know, is it that a woman's body is six times more, or is it the system that the woman plays in makes it six times more? Because if you look at, and my math is not going to be scientifically accurate, right? But if you take out the equation of if the women footballers are wearing boots designed for women, does that make it five times more? If they're, you know, provided with adequate or not adequate, but the same level of medical facilities or financial support, is it four times more? Yep. So I think there's the body part, and then I think there's the environment and the system part. And I think it's you can improve both. Yep. So, you know, ideally we get to the point where that I just can't say it for some reason, I need to have a beer, but it's just going to bring it back to, you know, can it come as close as 2-1? I don't know.
I think it's one of those things where you just have to keep coming at it from every single angle you can, surgery being one of them, equipment and supporting those companies that that are putting research and developing in that area. And then, demanding better of our pathway so that, you know, players haven't been going from 10 years ago not having that sort of professional training to all of a sudden getting to professionalized clubs but not having had necessarily that same lead-in time. So, all sorts of things that need to be worked on to improve.
Yes, I think we did, I think Majdale and I covered this, the wide range of issues on this on a podcast about 2 or 3 months ago. But the thing is, it's really about a follow-on from the lack of research, because I think, as I said in that podcast, the first time I heard about ACL injuries being way more common in women athletes than men athletes was when I was a child many, many, many years ago. And so it's disappointing that things haven't really progressed since then.
I was talking about my university women's studies back in the day, and I'm quite old. So women's studies back in university, reading articles about prevalence in netball. But then here we are a good 20 years later, and doesn't seem to have moved the dial that far in the research.
Yes. So we hope that changes as soon as we can. Hopefully there's some very smart people working on that right now. Oh, by the way, one last Aussie footballer with a recent ACL injury, Kayla Morrison, because as of January 14, thanks to offensive victory Vikings, she is now eligible for Australian citizenship. So I am more than happy to count her and think, and also, if I may be so bold as to project as to the February international window, I'd love to see her in the Matildas Cup of Nations squad.
Yeah, let's call that. That sounds good.
Green and gold. Now, moving on to actual games, just briefly running through the seemingly endless list of signings. We're halfway through the season. Teams are still signing people. Sydney signed a duo of Rola Bardawiya and Tegan Collister. Rola Bardawiya, an American who won the NPL New South Wales Player of the Award last season and is a forward. Tegan Collister, another forward, a winger who could potentially play as a fullback, but people will remember her from Young Matildas, Newcastle Jets, and Western Sydney Wanderers. And also one for Madge's heart, India Paige Riley has returned to Brisbane. Clearly didn't fancy that Danish winter and that long layoff, that long Danish winter break. So she's back home and it's definitely not feeling like winter where you are, Madge.
Yes, now, so happy to have Indy back and absolutely just back making a splash immediately as well. So great to see her back and, yeah, getting playing time with the Raw leading into a World Cup that hopefully she'll be part of for New Zealand.
Yes. And so so I think we'll just brush on the two midweek games, so they'll jump in if you had any, you know, pressing thoughts. Western United 2, Sydney FC 0, a game they got the job done again at City Vista, did Western United in a very odd Wednesday 5 p.m. kickoff, but, you know, that's, you got to play the game that's in front of you. Then also Adelaide 0, Melbourne City 3. I'll jump in first with Caitlin Carriage's goal at the end. That was
brilliant. Was lovely. It
wow.
Was
lovely. One of my favorite types of goal, when you curl it round the defender into the net and the keeper's almost like kind of unsighted for a bit. But yeah, just Caitlin Carriage loves scoring a worldie and she's done it again. Also, shout out to Hannah Keane from Western United scoring. She just keeps scoring the goals. And yeah, that's potentially a signing of the season, but, you know, there's still a long way to go in the season, of course. But on to the weekend, I'll start with the events at the beloved McKellar Park. Canberra 5, Newcastle 1. So Canberra have had their ups and downs, but it does at least look like McKellar Park's slowly creeping back to being the fortress it was back when Canberra was, you know, consistently up there challenging for titles. Michelle Heyman double. I like to see Vesna Milivojevic get on the score sheet, and we all love to see Ellie Brush get on the score sheet. So she's, speaking of ACLs, she's had an awful time with two back-to-back ACLs. So, but hopefully everything's fixed with Brushy's knees now.
10% and risk of doing a back-to-back based on that article as well.
Sorry? The
ACL.
The article referenced that there's a 10% reoccurrence.
Yeah.
So we've definitely seen some players who've done the left and then done the right, but then it's also a 10% reoccurrence. And I don't know if that's more specific to women or not. That was just the number that was mentioned.
Yeah, so.
Also a face goal. Ooh, I don't know what to call it. Goal, just a little bit unfortunate and then coming back out with the mask afterwards. But whatever gets it done.
Yes, and a shout out to Wu Cheng Shu. That's Canberra's second goal. The one goal I'd forgotten about, but yeah, how could I forget? Nikki Flannery's cross deflected into Wu's face and over the line, and a bit especially rough for Wu, who just come back from a facial injury.
Yes.
So that's kind of a variation on that old football cliche. If someone gets a head wound and has to come back on the field, the first thing they need to do is head the ball. I hope Wu's okay, because that was a bit awkward, but I'm sure she's glad for the goal and Canberra's result. And by the way, Newcastle's consolation, lovely goal from Tara Andrews. Now, I think we won't delay this any further. On to the shock of the season, I suppose. Western Sydney Wanderers 2, Western United 1. And yes, Western United surprised everyone with their 7 wins in a row to start the season. And then the bigger shock, the Wanderers, who had struggled to start the season, have been the first team to beat them. Now the Wanderers have 2 wins in a row. Did either of you catch much of that game?
The highlights. So
yeah,
I think
not the mini match. Yeah.
I think from the highlights, if I talk about it super quick, number one, it's great to see Kat Smith getting some results from the team. And I know it's not just Kat. I know it's the team and everything around them. So I think that's good. Western United have been doing brilliantly. I actually think it's good for them to lose a match.
Mm-hmm.
Not from beat them down kind of perspective, but I think it will make them even hungrier than what they were. work harder than what they were doing. And we often sort of see this kind of thing in series, and you come up to the finals and then, you know, it's been too easy and you don't get anywhere. So I think it's a good thing for them. When I looked at the highlights of 3 minutes, it looked to me like the goals from Western Sydney were not goals that were, you know, that from Western United's perspective, I think that there were some errors in and around their marking. And could they have been prevented? So I'm not taking anything away from the Wanderers. I think they exploited where they could. But the Wanderers know that they, you know, they can fix those things. So it's nothing catastrophic for them.
Yep. And yeah, they're definitely not catastrophic for Western United. I'm glad you made that point, Cheryl, because the Victorian team lost, but still plenty of Victorian success with Kat Smith getting the job done. And also, I have to put this, Serena Bolden with the first goal for the Wanderers, of course, Philippines international. There was a lovely part of the game where there were three, well, officially two Filipinas on the field at the same time, but we know Angie Beard switching. So three Filipinas on the field at the same time. And yeah, also...
So we know that she's switching?
Well, not officially, but...
Oh, okay. I was just wondering if I had missed something officially.
Yeah, not there's nothing official, but you know, I think we only need to wait till the February window based on.
I gotta just say, I was a bit disappointed that Bolden wasn't wearing her headband that she had been wearing previously. Given Jess McDonald on the other side as well, I'd like some good headbands running around on the field. So I would appreciate if she brought it back.
Yep. Okay. So, just like Ellie Brush, who is wearing a fantastic.
Yes.
And also at Wanderers Western United, something you don't often see, a goal from an indirect free kick taken inside the box. So.
Yes, that's right. I remember that. That was pretty sloppy. Yeah. They would be very disappointed with that.
Yeah. But it'd be interesting to see, and again, a comparison to men's football, but there would be 12 angles of that goal. Mm. When I saw it, it's kind of like the same angle a couple of different times, maybe one was slower, and I'm like, I still couldn't see how it went in.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do wonder, like, was there a different play? But Amy Harrison then just saw a spot and quickly, because it did look like then she just very quickly took it. So I wonder if she just saw a gap, the slightest of all gaps open up and went for it.
So I was on the grandstand side, Wanderers Football Park, still don't know how it went in. So I suspect that the second angle, you're making the point about lack of broadcast angles of women's football. I'm not, this particular goal, not exactly sure, not entirely sure it would have actually helped anyone, but still a mystery to us, but you know, well done from Amy Harrison. Now, you touched on this, Madge, but Brisbane won, Adelaide won, is the first of the Sunday games. Yep. And India Paige Riley didn't take long to make an impact.
Yeah, look, we thought it was going to be earlier. She got called offside, putting away a deflection from a Shea Connors shot that was called offside. And I was ready to get the indie song going, but until we saw the offside flag, but we did get to pull it out. So it was great to see Indy back on the field, really industrious, sort of bringing a lot of energy, because I think she's signed as I believe an injury replacement for Marielle Ecker, who is of course one of those just amazingly energetic players that I think we've missed since she went away with injury. But then Indy sort of not exactly the same sort of player, but just some of that finishing edge that I think will be lovely that we've possibly been missing a few times. But then she was just really industrious up and down the wing I think she played for about 60 minutes. I'm not sure, so she didn't play out the whole game. Disappointing way to sort of level just a handball in the box, bit of a messy scramble, handball off a shot from Adelaide. But guess what? It wasn't an 8-2 loss. So I was pretty happy at the end of the day, given what happened last season. That was a vast improvement. And it was a pretty entertaining game. So I think both teams sort of had some chances. There's a bit of niggle in there as well. Good.
Oh, speaking of niggle, is it time to talk about Perth and Wellington? I don't know.
Not yet. I will. But by the way, just one last question before we move on to the Melbourne Derby. How hot was it at AJ Kelly? It
wasn't too bad. So that's the thing. It's like I was talking with someone about that at the game, and that I think we we had one game pushed back when Brisbane was really hot, so which was supposed to be a 2 o'clock kickoff, and it was pushed back to a 4 o'clock kickoff. I think being at AJ Kelly, it is close to the water, so I think generally the degrees do tend to be a little bit less. But also Brisbane just hasn't been stiflingly hot recently, so I think we've lucked out. Yeah, I still think the point though that, you know, the 2 p.m., 3 p.m. kickoffs for in a summer competition, just you're rolling the dice. Mm-hmm. So I think our Brisbane games, we've lucked out in that it hasn't been too bad beyond that first couple of games that were at Perry Park. But yeah, soon, I don't know if it's next home game, we should be moving back to Perry Park. There might be another one up at AJ mm-hmm. Kelly. But yeah, so you're moving into your sort of January, February, where, you know, that's known for some pretty nasty temperatures as well. So yeah, we've lucked out so far though.
Yeah. So I like your phrase "roll of the dice," because too often in a job with these kickoff times, you end up rolling snake eyes, and it's 37 yep. degrees, and yep. you need 4 drinks breaks. But yeah, like onto Cheryl's neck of the woods, although it's not that close to her, down at Casey Fields, or as the Victory Vikings call it, Dumont Fields. I love that. Melbourne City won, Melbourne Victory won. What were your takes from the Melbourne Derby? I believe, was that the first Melbourne Women's Derby that's ended in a draw? Or did I get that right? I don't know.
That rings
a
bell.
I think I've heard that somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, again, I didn't watch the whole game. Casey Fields is a very, 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 extremely, extremely, very long way away from me. And I can't necessarily see myself going out there. And I did want to bring into the context of the conversation maybe a rating of the grounds that the mm-hmm. dub is being played on at the moment, not just from a fan perspective of someone like me saying, it's too far, I don't want to drive out there or something or other, but fans who need public transport, the rating of shade. You know, we went to CB Smith a week or two ago and there's just literally no shade. It's, yeah, there's a whole bunch of variations there. And then you look at the players, is it adequate facilities for the players as well? So for me, Casey Fields didn't go there, didn't see a lot of the game. It looks weird. The crowds mm-hmm. weren't there. There's sort of, there's a big setback by the look of it. I'd love for someone who has been there to give us a shout out or ping us on Twitter or whichever which way and let us know your thoughts. Maybe the Victory Vikings can ping us. Mm. You know, great birthday present for Chids, and nice to see Hannah Wilkinson come back and score a goal after being away injured for a little bit. I don't know how much the game really told me about where either of those teams are at the moment. Maybe, yeah, it is what it is. So I don't know if anyone else had bigger thoughts than me. That's not very detailed, but.
I thought firstly, I did see some fan photos from Casey Fields. Well, I think they were Casey Fields. I saw a green space and what appeared to be a football field in the very, very, very far distance. But yeah, not the greatest viewing angles, unfortunately, there. Also, if those of you watching the Paramount Plus streams, if you see at the start of the game or just before the start of the second half, just how much the camera has to zoom in so you can actually see the field, yeah, you'll get an idea of how less than ideal that venue is for spectators. But yeah, my thoughts on that game, absolute chaos at the end. Letitia McKenna is great at putting corners into dangerous areas. Melbourne City forced a number of goal mouth scrambles but couldn't get it over the line, and then Tef Aliadis had that chance which he missed, and I think that's the nicest possible way I can describe that chance. Now move on, because Cheryl did mention this. Perth 2 Wellington 0. Two early goals get the job done for Perth. They managed it from there, but I think we have to acknowledge the two red cards. So Emma Ralston and Ella Mastrantonio being given their marching orders, and I've just received an email because they have published the bans already. Emma Ralston will miss the next two games. Ella Mastrantonio is going to miss the next three games. Wellington are not appealing. They put that on their socials. Don't know what Perth's going to do yet. But yeah, we don't want to make it, of course, about this, but just, yeah, because you brought this up, Cheryl. Do you think that's fair? What's happened?
I think Ella Mastrantonio looks good in blue. So, you know, I love it when she's playing in Melbourne Victory, and then when she's playing in Perth, it's a completely different thing. This is maybe more in Eric's dark arts realm, I think. Mm. You know, the players are playing football. I don't want to comment too much. Mm.
Of course.
It probably detracts from the game a little bit. But, it's good to see some fire in some of the games, but it's about being, still being well-behaved within that fire. Madge?
I do suspect, I wonder whether or not it's because, there was sort of like contact with the head. I mean, nothing, it was a bit slappy, but I think as soon as anything gets to, facial striking, you're going to be in for some pretty tough penalties. I can only assume, I don't know the laws of the game well enough and the penalties involved, but I can only assume Ella's might be a little bit harsher because of the retaliation. I'm not sure.
Is it based on record? I'm not sure
if there's
well?
A history. Yeah, I'm not sure if there's a record and whether there's any significant difference there. But I think if they just kept it to shoulder, shovey, mm-hmm. We probably wouldn't be talking about something as harsh as this. So you gotta just walk the line sometimes. But I imagine that's hard sometimes in the heat of the moment,
especially even the heat of Macedonia Park, because that was a 4 p.m. kickoff, of course.
Well, and I think so, Casey Rybelt we've got a number of great referees in the dub. Casey Rybelt is also going to the World Cup, but pretty sure. So, we've got someone who's extremely experienced. I wonder whether or not there'd been any build-up throughout the game of a little bit of niggle or something. I'm not too sure. And whether or not there's anything that could have been stamped out beforehand, I don't know. But it's dealt with now. The players will have to just deal with that. And the club, no doubt, will have their own kind of sanctions of a sort, which might not be any extra time. But it's like, you need to go off and do some, calmness training or whatever it might be. I don't know. But, not ideal. And then it's detracted from the result of the game. But it's passion, and that's not a bad thing.
Yep. So for what it's worth, in the email from the match review panel, the official name of the offence is assault on a player. For example, violent conduct when not challenging for the ball or against any other person other than a match official, including attempted assault, which sounds more serious than it really was in this instance. But So that's what Rolston Macedonia have been charged with and has resulted in the bans. So I don't really want to get into why Ella Macedonia has received one more game in her ban than Emma Rolston has. But we should talk about the actual game. Well done to Perth, because I think R. Neil Bennett's made this point possibly in an article, possibly on the pod as well, that they have kind of struggled at home defensively, but they did keep a clean sheet. The early goals from Sierra Hinson and Susan Fongsonkam. It's good to see, speaking of injury issues, it's good to see Susan Fongsonkam playing, because it hasn't been an ACL, but she has had a kind of rough few years in that respect. And then it's a perfect clean sheet at home, but also for Wellington, I suspected it was going to go this way. The first ever women's distance derby, the first time that a very young squad has had to travel from Wellington all the way to Perth. So I think onwards and upwards for them, and they'll hope they take it all as a learning experience. But now let's preview round 11 of dub. But first we have a midweek game, Wednesday 6 p.m. By the way, all these times are Australian Eastern Daylight Time, so adjust these in your heads as you need to. But Wednesday, suddenly an intriguing clash, didn't look like this way 2 weeks ago. Western Sydney Wanderers versus Melbourne Victory, with Melbourne Victory forced to travel midweek, which will
Wanderers are planning to make their way through the entire top four. They're gonna knock them all off one by one.
Yeah, that would be incredible if that happened. And it would be so annoying to that fan base, because the one team they can't beat is Sydney. They've already lost to them twice, so the only way for them to get the better of Sydney is if they meet in the finals. But I hope to be down there at Wanderers Football Park. And it's suddenly a very interesting game. But of course, we'll cover that for you next week. Then Saturday, 2:20 p.m., a game in Tasmania, Western United versus Brisbane. So Western United, as part of their planning to be an A-League women team, they've struck up links in Tasmania. This is part of that. I believe they've been sending their players to Tasmania just to play midweek games to get them used to interstate travel. So, and you can see the benefits with that. But Madge, you're the resident Brisbane Roar fan. How do you feel about going down to Tasmania to face Western, because the Wanderers have proved they are not infallible.
Yeah, well, I mean, hopefully Hobart's not going to be as stiflingly hot as some other places in the country. I'm not entirely sure what the climate's like down there at the moment for a 220 kickoff. But yeah, look, I mean, it'll be a tough battle, no doubt. Western United have still looked really good, and they could be angry and have been working on those small defensive lapses from their previous game. But Brisbane have looked good. So I think, if they can have some luck go their way and hold it together sort of defensively. But I think it'll be a tough one for Brisbane.
Yeah. So Saturday, 3 p.m. is Melbourne City versus the Wanderers. So a quick opportunity for Melbourne City to get revenge on the Wanderers. Then Saturday, 4 p.m., Adelaide versus Victory in Adelaide. Cheryl, any particular thoughts on that one?
I think it's tough for Victory that they're played on the weekend, play midweek, and their away games as well, and then coming back to play Adelaide. It'll test some of their depth. Adelaide, I think, are always a good team, and particularly a good team at home, I think. So it'll be an interesting match. But, we're getting to the point where the team should really be showing us their form. Like with the Dub, it's kind of a weird sport in a way. And I call it a sport because it's just like, don't pay attention to anything at the start, because by the end, it's going to be completely different. I feel like we're in that sweet spot now where we should be able to see some real, real pictures of what the teams are going to be able to deliver for us. But I do think it'll be hard for Victory with a bit of travel happening.
Yeah. And I mean, Victory and Jeff Hopkins there, because of the end of last season, their experience in dealing with short turnarounds, I'm sure they'd love to be a little bit less experienced at dealing with these short turnarounds. Also now, a quirk of the schedule and time zones and all that, the round is finished with a Sunday 10:15 a.m. game on the East Coast, Wellington versus Canberra. So 12:15 p.m. kickoff in Wellington. So as with January the 2nd, those of us on the East Coast will get some brunch football. So it's just like watching the under 12s, but in some ways a great start to your Sunday to have your dub in the morning.
I have to give myself a shout out as well. Sunday's actually my birthday. I should be able to just lie in bed and watch the dub, but we're actually heading off to the tennis. So I'll be at the tennis and probably not watching it, but maybe on my phone.
Yeah, maybe just sneak it in on your phone because it is your birthday. Happy birthday in advance, Cheryl. By the way, the final game schedule for that round, Sydney versus Perth, has been postponed to Wednesday, 29th of March. That was meant to be Saturday, the 21st of January. Link to an article in the show notes. Basically, Sydney couldn't source an available crowd in the whole of Sydney. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Perth offered to host and pay the costs. Sydney rejected the offer, which is the Perth side of the story, and Perth Glory are not best pleased, and neither am I, because I was looking forward to going to this game. And
I think it's pretty poor. And I don't think Sydney have given up a particularly good reason for why this is happening.
No, they have not, because I mean, even if it was Gosford, Newcastle, Wollongong, isn't that better than what they're doing at the end? Because
And considering like the benefits that Sydney have had as a team during the COVID times as well, by being able to play so many of their games at home at the expense of a Perth and a Wellington, for them to seemingly not be bending the other way, I'm just going to say it's pretty poor. Then I would hope that there is a much better reason that they're just not coming out with, but on the face of it, it looks pretty poor.
Yes. So, we've been doing this for a while, so let's just breeze through overseas Aussies, full details in the show notes as always. Now, we have to talk about Sam Kerr's 89th minute equaliser in the London Derby, Arsenal versus Chelsea. And, that's why she's been nominated for the best player again. Arsenal dominated the game from what I could tell on the Optus mini match, but 89th minute, great cross in from Yelena Chankovic, and Sam Kerr
rising did what she does best. As Sam Kerr does.
Yes, that's right. So it was, and then just a little bit of a celebration in front of the Arsenal fans, which I liked. I I think I've made this point privately to someone else that some people may not like it, but I think there's too much pressure on women athletes to be, in inverted commas, nice. So, you know, it's just a hand to the ear. Nothing wrong with that. What else is noteworthy? Shame that Dale missed this pod because his beloved Everton won. They beat Reading 3-2, and they're dancing in the streets of Lockie France because Manchester United beat Liverpool 6-0. Oh, and the big one, Leicester City won a game. Their first points of the season. So Remy Simpson already lifting the standards, and she's not even in the match day squad, but they beat Brighton 3-0. And I do believe they scored two goals to that point up to that point in the season. So well done them. So Leicester City, clearly a new case of new year, new me. Heartbreak, a bit of heartbreak for Jerome Montemurro, leading 1-0 up in injury time against Sassuolo, copped a late equaliser, so that was a bit rough. And Anna Margraf's Meppen not back to competitive action yet, but they have been playing some friendlies as they tune up after the winter break. So fortunately, I wasn't able to find any details of any playing action for Anna, so if you know, please shout us out, but let us know somehow. But now, on to Queen/Kings/Non-Binary Legends of the Week. And I think, Cheryl, you can go first with yours, because I love this one.
Oh, look, I'll go first and happily say happy birthday to friend of the pod, Alex Chidiak. Alex, we love the way that you play football. We love the way that you engage in football as well. And scoring a goal on your birthday, I think, is a pretty nice way to go. I'm not going to score a goal on my birthday at the tennis, but I still rate it. While I've got the mic as well, I just wanted to drop in a couple of random things. We don't always do random things, but I just started watching Welcome to Wrexham, which has been interesting, and also ties into the other random thing that I wanted to talk about. Ages ago, I did one of those DNA tests just because, you know, whatever, it's kind of a little bit entertaining. And it turns out, so I always found myself, my dad was, let's just say, English, and my mum is Russian-Ukrainian. So, you know, that's a nice little mix for you, particularly at the moment. But going through my DNA, I'm actually more Welsh than I am English. So I'm 17% Welsh, average approximately. But I'm also 15% Swedish/Danish. So I might have to change my allegiance, because I do have a bit of an allegiance for England. I might have to look a little further out to Wales, and also a little out to maybe Sweden and Denmark. So I'll go get myself a couple of jerseys.
Excellent. Love it. And as I said, I think nationality should be based on vibes. Just support whoever you want.
but if you can't work out who you want to support, then this is going to help the vibes.
Yes. So shout out to Dale Roots and Neil Bennett, who couldn't be on the pod today, but have also nominated their selection. So Dale nominated Ellie Brush for scoring her first goal since suffering two ACL injuries. He did say a joker, which, because the image chosen for Canberra's Ellie Brush goal graphic was, let's just say, suboptimal. That. And then Neil, like this one. So Arsenal have announced that they will install artwork at Emirates Stadium, which pays the proper respect to the history of their women's team. They've won so many league titles. They've won a Champions League, I do believe. So it's good to see, because, I mean, and especially in light of that Arsenal-Chelsea WSL game, which had a crowd of, I think, 47,000. It's good to see Arsenal really, you know, making a big deal of their women's team, because the women, they really deserve it. They are a big deal.
I love now, that one. Nice one, Neil.
Yep. Yep. And on to Madge, who have you selected this week?
Well, I've selected Kim Carroll for reaching the 150 club. So I should have looked up how many have hit the 150, because there can't be very many.
Three more.
I know.
And I can't remember who they are.
Polks definitely did, because we did a whole thing for Polks. And Kim Carroll was, of course, playing with Brisbane for that game. So it's great to see Kim Carroll having, you know, flipped between coming from the Queensland Sting back in the old WNSL days, to Brisbane Roar, to Perth Glory, back to Brisbane Roar, back to Perth Glory. I think a couple of championships and a premiership in there. So a fantastic career, and getting all of the plaudits and love from teammates from all over the league and the world. So very well deserved. Ex-Matilda as well. So just a great stalwart of the game, and great to see her reach that milestone.
Yeah, so Dan, question, a quick search of the tweets from friend of Beyond 90, Marissa Lordanik, because she's great at keeping track of this. The other two in the A-League Women 150 Club, Teresa Pelias and Caitlin Cooper.
There we go.
So, and all four of that club have played for the Matildas at some point as well. Now,
reason Pelias is going to come back and play football. Still such a young player.
She can. It's possible. Like I think she'd be great for you presume Sydney FC if she does come back. But she gave birth less than 12 months ago. So, I mean, she did kind of ease into it with some games for Sydney Olympic and NPL New South Wales this year. So, yeah, I would not be surprised if she comes back at some point to add to that tally. Now, I've decided this next selection's on behalf of all of us. Congratulations to all the Aussie and Kiwi referees, assistant referees, and video match officials who are named on the list for the Women's World Cup. So that's Kate Jakovits, Anna-Marie Keeley, Casey Rybelt, Joanna Haraktis, Sarah Jones, and Chris Beath. Now, so onto my selection. So firstly, shout out to the Football New South Wales Thunder futsal team who won the Open Women's Division of the FFA Futsal National Championships, defeating Capital Football 4-1 in the final after extra time. In your face, Stefan. And my second selection is Eileen Gleeson, who's been named by the Football Association of Ireland as their head of women and girls football. We talk about structural things all the time and the need to improve stuff in this space. Well, that's in a very important role. Ireland have got a good one. She's former assistant coach to the national team. Most recently, the head coach of Glasgow City, has coached with distinction in the Irish National League. So good, very good fit there for the FA of Ireland. But I think we're about at the end. Did you have anything else to add, either of you?
All good for me. Thank you.
Not a problem. Well, in that case, that's the end of episode 130 of the Beyond 90 podcast. Thanks so much for your support. Thanks for tuning in once again on behalf of Cheryl Downs and Marissa Lordanik. We wish you a life full of good vibes, tattoos, razzlers, and league schedules that make sense and don't overload your players. See you next time.